Hello, welcome to My Style Live. My name is Shardy, MBA, and I'm your host for My Style Live podcast. My Style Live podcast is a fashion podcast for the industry gatekeepers and elite, covering style, business, healthcare, music, and culture. Thank you for tuning in with my podcast today. Today we are going to have Dr. Kevin Dennis, MD, PharmD. He is a Meharry Medical College alumni. He's going to talk with us about the COVID-19, the disease that has caused the 2019 novel coronavirus. In just a few weeks, the COVID-19 has undone a century's worth of our economic and social habits. What consequences will this have on our future? What kills the coronavirus? When can we go back to Las Vegas? How do you disinfect your iPhone with the coronavirus? Well, these are just a couple of topics. I'm going to ask questions, but I'm sure he's going to have more medical knowledge that can help us. And now I'm going to pass it over to Dr. Dennis. Some questions that I have, or what are some of the questions that people ask you? Are you finding? What kind of gloves do you need for coronavirus? When will the coronavirus peak? Hi, how are you doing, Dr. Dennis?
Thank you for having me, Char. Yeah, this is a great opportunity here to talk on your podcast. I really appreciate this opportunity. Today we're going to have a lot of fun talking about coronavirus and a little bit about the COVID-19, what it's all about. And of course, all of us have been shut in for quite a long period of time, and I'm sure we're frustrated and ready to get out here in the world and the community and environment and get back to our normal selves. However, in the healthcare community and what I'm doing, I spend a lot of time communicating with patients as well as research and reading journals and things of that nature. I try to keep myself abreast of what's really going on with the coronavirus. Well, the coronavirus has been around a long time. It's in the United States, we've called it COVID-19, and the CDC has called it COVID-19. And I think that the CDC was looking for style points when they created the term COVID-19, because the coronavirus is the real term, and it really comes out of the SARS virus, COVID-2, but they thought to be fancy. They really want to get fancy with the COVID, so they call it COVID for coronavirus disease from 2019.
Okay.
So that's what it really stands for. COVID-19 is a fancy term that was created by the CDC, I'm sure by some young folks up there, and they really wanted to say, you know what, we want a name for this disease that's destroying our daily lives, and they call it COVID-19. It's called coronavirus disease of 2019. Now, isn't that something?
Yes, it is. COVID-19. I like that name instead of coronavirus. Coronavirus just sounds so long.
Right, but they actually created the term COVID-19. So that's what COVID-19 really is, and that's what it really stands for. So it's a little trivia point for you.
What does corona, it's not the beer?
No, corona has nothing to do with beer. I tell you what, but their stock is really hurting because of it. I tell you that coronavirus, when it first came out, people were talking about, I ain't getting no corona beer because that going to catch that coronavirus. But really, it really has nothing to. They really are not connected at all. However, the coronavirus is a serious virus, and it's been with us for generations, actually. It's not new. The coronavirus is a set of viruses that's caused the common cold for years and years, and the coronavirus traditionally has been found in animals and rodents for generations. Animals. Really, the coronavirus is really found in animals. So that's why that's why humans and globally, we really weren't afraid of the coronavirus, because traditionally they're limited to animals. But I think around 2002, we had the first case of human virus called the SARS virus. And the SARS virus, S-A-R-S, stands for Severe Acute Respiratory Virus, and that actually affected humans, and it was very treacherous and very dangerous. It caused about 60 to 80% mortality, which means that 60 to 80% of people who got it actually died.
Wow.
Yeah, so that virus was in 2002. So the coronavirus, or the COVID-19, is actually a child of the SARS virus.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you this. Do they have a cure for the SARS virus?
The answer to that question is no.
Okay.
But they were treating the SARS virus with antivirals, and it seemed to have had some success. But the SARS virus dissipated as quickly as it came. So, in other words, it came in to China, and then it went out of China, and it only affected a few people in the U.S. But the coronavirus itself, the COVID-19 we have now, again, is a child or a likeness of the SARS virus, okay, which was very, very similar in nature to it. And it actually has come out of that virus and has mutated and changed into something new and different. So they've given it its own title now, which is called SARS-CoV-2, or what we call the COVID-19.
Okay, so is the SARS virus, is that a worldwide virus just like COVID-19? I kind of like the way that sounds.
Yes, it is a SARS virus. It's just similar the same way. SARS was global as well. But again, it came in very quickly and went out very quickly. It only lasted for a short period of time, for a few months. The COVID-19 virus is very, very similar in nature to the flu. In other words, some people get it, some people don't. And those who get it may have a mild form of it, and others get serious forms of it. And we really don't know who's going to get the serious component or the mild component. So it's really kind of it's kind of difficult for clinicians to actually treat it and or know exactly who's going to develop the serious cases of coronavirus requiring them to be hospitalized in ICU or to be ventilated. So we're spending a lot of time and research trying to identify those types of patients.
Okay. Do you see the travel industry kind of changing with all of this pandemic and everything that's going on now?
Well, of course, travel is very limited. We're not seeing any travel with, of course, airplanes, railways. Everything is limited on shutdown. Plus, if you take the chance to do that, you're putting yourself at risk as well as your families. So we're finding that travel has been very, very limited for this pandemic. And it's best to actually stay home and not travel. As much as we love to travel, as much as all of us want to get out of our homes and want to visit our families, want to take vacations, get on cruise ships, we all want to get out there in the world and enjoy those fun things we enjoy doing. We even enjoy shopping. For instance, if you want to go to the Louis Vuitton store, I would not recommend going to the Louis Vuitton store. No, you ain't no Louis Vuitton, Gucci. Don't do the Louis Vuitton, Gucci store. Don't do all those kind of things, because I tell you, most of them are closed anyway.
Yes, they are.
most of them are closed anyway. But I still would spend time maybe researching online their favorite products and the favorite things that you may want to buy after the COVID is gone. So you might want to spend some time on the internet searching around for the best sales and the best deals and what's available.
So be a window shopper.
Yeah, be a window shopper this time.
Okay.
COVID actually has really helped to enhance window shopping. Window shopping is the best style search process that you can have at any time right now. I think that's the best thing to do. It's the safest thing to do. And I think that in the end, your choices for what we call your best items on the market and the availability of the market will be suited for you if you just sit at home and search from your computers.
Window shopping. Okay.
Yeah. Window shop. Yeah.
I can save a lot of money, can't I?
Yeah, you can save a lot of money. Yes, you can. But still, online shopping can make you broke. So just be careful how you do shop online, okay?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I have to have a little discipline over here.
You have to have discipline in the process. But COVID definitely is allowing and forcing a different way of approaching sales and buying, for sure.
Okay. Okay, so we're going to get a little more in-depth, you know, about the COVID-19. Let me get the proper term for it. Can you tell us a little more about what you're seeing on a daily basis of COVID-19, or what are some things that you've encountered with COVID-19?
Well, to be honest with you, COVID-19 is insidious. So a lot of patients that you see, they come in with mild symptoms. Like, for instance, they may say have a small fever. They may have a headache, abdominal pains. They may state that they have a small cough that comes and goes. So they're very, very mild symptoms. And you have to use some sense of knowledge in questioning the patient so that you do not make the wrong decision about how to approach the care of that patient. For instance, I had an example recently of a patient that arrived, and they stated for the last 4 days, they had a fever that went up and down. Fever that was worse more at night when they were asleep. They were taking medications like Tylenol and ibuprofen to bring the fever down. Stated they had a headache, nausea, and it seemed as though they were managing the fever on a daily basis to bring it to normalcy, but it would pop right back up to a high fever of over 102.
Wow.
So, of course, this patient actually went to their primary care physician's office, attempted to enter, and they rejected her. They stated you could not come into their offices and to seek a COVID testing center. Well, some of the centers that are available actually are not available on a daily basis. They may have 2-day-a-week, maybe 3-day-a-week opportunities, which is one of the biggest problems with the COVID virus, is having proper testing. Availability of testing should be daily, at least Monday through Friday, and weekends, allowing patients who have symptoms to be tested accordingly. So in this particular case, I had to give this patient a 1-800 number to the health department where they could find and identify testing centers for her, because in my personal opinion, I believe that she had the COVID virus. Her husband was a construction worker, and on the news within 24 hours, the news stated that construction workers in this particular local area had been infected with the coronavirus.
Oh, wow.
And her husband, more than likely, was part of that construction crew who had not or was underreported to the health department for the continuance of construction. So, in short, what I'm telling you is that the approach to managing a patient with the coronavirus has to be quick, fast, with the right questions, and also have the capability to move and manage where these patients should go for proper care. Now, most patients who are very sick and cannot breathe with respiratory symptoms, they go straight to the ER because they can't breathe. They need a breathing treatment and or they need to be ventilated, given oxygen, and or they end up being placed on a ventilator. So those patients don't arrive at your office or your primary care office. They don't arrive at your urgent care centers because they can't breathe.
Okay.
So they immediately go to the emergency room. So that's the approach. The approach to the care and management and recognition of the patient are the simplest symptoms, the smallest symptoms, and then using your intelligence and your medical knowledge to get them where they need to go.
Okay. So when you see, you're seeing a variety of people. You might have some that are asymptomatic, some that are not exhibiting any symptoms, some that are walking around and don't even know they have it.
Exactly. And many patients actually are trying to hide their symptoms. They really don't want anyone to know what their true symptoms are. I'm finding in the majority of cases, they're not being honest with the symptoms that they're having because they don't want to be identified as a COVID-19 potential patient because they immediately go into quarantine for a minimum of 14 days. And that takes them away from their family. It takes them away from their work. So no one wants to be identified as a COVID patient. So they hide their symptoms and don't tell the truth. So you really have to spend a lot of time asking the right questions in the right way so they give you honest answers.
Okay, well, the CDC came out with a very chilling document a few weeks ago. It was showing about a third of very sick people in hospitals are under the age of 40 or 44. So between 20 and 44 young adults, would you say that they don't have to worry about anything?
What I'd rather say is that the COVID virus does not discriminate. It does not identify its host based on age. The COVID virus comes into the body and it identifies normal cells. It identifies cells within the human body and it attacks them. Now, when it attacks those cells in the body, those patients that have a higher propensity for catching the disease will then get the disease. And those patients that have a higher propensity for having comorbidities like diabetes, asthma, COPD, smoking history, vaping history, those patients do worse with recovery of the coronavirus. The coronavirus identifies cells within the respiratory tree. The coronavirus attacks cells, again, in the respiratory tree. What that means is the trachea, which takes down air to the lung tissue, those cells are at the highest risk for having coronavirus. So young people who have some of those illnesses, including obesity, are just as at risk as someone 65 years of age.
Okay, there's been a lot of buzz too on the internet about ibuprofen. So what can you tell us about, should you take it? Should you not take it? You know, does it make young adults very sick?
Well, initially, about a month ago, they were stating that ibuprofen as an anti-inflammatory was actually making patients worse. However, to this day, that information is really not true. So they've had to remove that information because they've not been able to identify whether or not ibuprofen truly, truly makes the inflammation process worse.
Okay, so are you telling people to stay away from that or not?
We're not communicating that any longer about no ibuprofen. What we are communicating is that if you have a loss of taste, a loss of smell, along with respiratory symptoms, more than likely you have early phase COVID and you need to seek treatment and care. As far as over-the-counter management, which you have at home, there are no products at home that truly treat COVID virus. The COVID virus affects the lungs, causes inflammation of the lung tissue, causes lung tissue to become wet. So you develop a wet cough and it suffocates you.
Oh, wow.
And so once it starts to suffocate you, that's when you have to be ventilated quickly so that you can get oxygen to those lung tissue areas.
Okay, the other night I was watching the news, Channel 5 News, and a young lady was saying she was actually a surgeon, orthopedic surgeon, and she was saying you can hit your lungs and that'll help you. I mean, you know, so when people say these different kind of things, it's best just to go to the emergency room.
Exactly. You can always use what's called chest percussion as an opportunity to help loosen wet lungs, but those wet lungs that you have are better suited by having proper ventilation with oxygen on a ventilator machine. And currently right now, hospitals are short on ventilators. That's why the big buzz was, we need more ventilators. We need more ventilators. Okay. We need more ventilators. Because ventilators actually help to get oxygen into the lungs and they maintain the lungs patency and they allow the lungs to remain open for air to get in. So that's what they need ventilators for.
Okay, so some people are also saying don't take any aspirin because of this respiratory virus infection. I mean, it has a severe reaction. Is that true too?
We're not finding that either. The goal here is to get correct medication, which will be antivirals, which are currently in production and in testing phase. Currently, there is only one antiviral that's been approved as a trial experiment product, and it's been approved recently within the last, probably the last 72 hours, actually, from this podcast to be approved. So they're trying this product through the FDA. It is unapproved, and we're hoping that this antiviral truly has the capability of doing something positive in COVID-positive patients.
Okay, so did they even know that this virus probably got here in December, or they're just guessing, you know? I think it was here a lot sooner than what they're saying, that we just didn't catch it.
That's actually true. Forensic studies recently have done some autopsies and found that as early as second week of December, some patients now are being tested positive for having had COVID-19 at that time when they were misdiagnosed, but actually having other illnesses and other diseases. So more than likely, the COVID-19 has been in the U.S. all the way back to December 2019. And I'm having a feeling that they'll probably go back even further.
Okay. You know, I'm so glad that you're bringing this up because this is really important for people to understand. And, you know, sometimes people haven't looked into the symptoms and the complications of things that have happened before. So I'm sure you're right. It probably was here before that time as well.
Yeah, true, true. I think that as time goes on, daily, weekly, more information keeps coming out about COVID-19, the structure, timeline, patient management, as well as trying to figure out ethnicity and cultural differences and how the virus affects certain communities. Right now, they've shown that up to as high as 45% of patients in New York, when they became ill in the hospital, were African American, actually. And so we're seeing that the African American and Latino populations have a harder, more intense COVID-19 response, such that they actually end up dying faster, as well as becoming sicker faster. And that's something that we really, really trying to identify along with the CDC and the World Health Organizations, as well as many other medical institutions and research. Why are people of color affected more intensely with the COVID-19 versus non-colored people?
Wow.
And we're thinking that there may be some association with our lifestyles, how we have to live, patients not having the capability to socially isolate, having multiple generational families in one home, where you may have parents and families who have basically great grandparents, grandparents, parents, and children all living within the same home because of public housing, as well as inability to travel, inability to get to hospitals and healthcare, inability to meet the guidelines of what the government is stating for social distancing. Our populations, or African-American people of color, tend to have less capability to even go to a grocery store for proper nutrition. So a lot of these factors are important and are being discussed as to how society has segregated certain populations such that they don't have access to the best care and the best medication and the capabilities to isolate, associate with COVID, and find themselves in a better position to live.
So would you say that this is maybe a poverty issue and a socioeconomic, you know, problem? Because most African Americans do have diabetes and hypertension.
I would say for sure it is an issue. As a matter of fact, in the state of New York, there was what they call a flight, northern flight, that occurred with the wealthy populations in New York. They left and moved and went to upstate New York and to other places when the COVID hit, so that they would not have to be exposed to the possibility of COVID-19 in New York, where those who could not travel, those who could not live or afford to leave, had to stay in New York. So again, it left populations who were more impoverished in New York and they became overexposed. Others left New York and went to other places and laughed at those other families.
Wow, that's really sad, but I guess that's life.
Well, it's a life process, but it's something that we all have to look at from a society as well as government, as well as our own neighbors, as people. How do we challenge ourselves to become better people so that things like this that expose the gaps that we have in society so that when the next coronavirus hits years later, we can approach it differently so that everyone has the opportunity to be safe. No one should have to die from an illness because they just were poor.
Okay, so the racial disparity is a problem.
Yeah, racial disparity is a huge problem. As a matter of fact, the president of Meharry Medical College has been addressing this recently on CNN, MSNBC, and other places. And I think that for those of you who can actually go back and look at some of the communication and some of the communication as well as some of the feeds from the shows, you can really see how even the White House is even having to address the problem as well, because it really looks really, really bad for the United States to have these impoverished, poor patients who cannot survive just because of the fact that they live the way they live.
Wow. So would you say about 70% of the African Americans, the deaths are comprised with 70% of African Americans?
Well, I think you look at the numbers. Some studies say 70%. Some studies may say more like 60%. But in general, the numbers are much higher than what the population is compared to the illness. In other words, our populations have to go to work. We can't sit at home. A lot of African-American populations, Latino populations, make up the highest percentages of what they call the service industries. When you look at construction, when you look at food service, all those areas are considered essential, landscaping. And so they're placed in a position where they have to work. They're not in a position where they can relax at home and stay at home and stay safe. They have to go to work. So there is a higher level of exposure to the potential of Corona COVID-19 by just the fact that certain populations have lower income service industry jobs, and they're not allowed or given the opportunity to move into other areas. As a matter of fact, 30% of LPNs and nursing assistants in the United States are African-American women.
Wow.
30%. That means that 30% of African-American women in those industries are on the front lines trying to save lives, but at the same time, they are the ones that are highly exposed to the virus, Black women. So that's something to really look at too as well.
Okay, so Dr. Dennis, let's look at some of the safety things or the safety topics. You know, everybody's talking about what is a PPE, personal protective equipment. What does it explain? Do you think that maybe some African Americans have a lack of having the PPEs, or they're not given the PPEs?
Well, PPE really comes out of a healthcare definition. PPE also comes out of an industry definition. PPE has been here for a long time, but personal protective equipment that has been used in the past traditionally has not been a daily home protective product. So therefore, access to that product is limited. In other words, you cannot go to Target and say, I'm looking for PPE.
I can't go to Louis and get one?
No. It's not made available that way.
Okay.
So you can't go to your favorite store and walk in and say, hey, can you show me your PPE aisle? It doesn't exist. So when you talk about access, you're talking about accessing something that is so different, so unique, that there's not even a defining difference between what's a good PPE, what's a mid to moderate PPE, what's a surgical PPE, what's a, you know, the different levels of PPE. There's different numbers, like N95 masks, there are different types of masks.
What about a gas mask?
I mean, even a gas mask. You know, if you want to walk around with a little gas mask, you know, my thing is be sure you can breathe in that thing.
Okay.
And so, but the thing is, you know, so we talk about PPE, really for your standard everyday citizen, that's not something that they're comfortable with, nor are they familiar with. So it's very difficult to select the proper products with the what we call the micron smallest level protection of organism penetration through a mask. Mm-hmm. Persons can't even understand what that means. We're talking about microns. Okay, so
a micron, what's a micron?
Again, microns are very, very small, small levels of penetration that we use for measurement for organisms. So when you start thinking on that level,
you just went over my head.
Right. You know, it's microbiology. But my thing is, common sense says you have to educate your population, educate the public so that they know what they're looking for, what they're buying, why they're buying it, and how to properly wear the items that they have. Because if you wear it incorrectly, it still doesn't work anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's the true thing about PPE. It's like having a pair of shoes. Hey, everybody knows how to wear Jordans. Ain't no problem wearing Jordans. Everybody know how to pick out a pair of Jordans and wear the Jordans.
Yes, you do.
But when it comes to PPE, you have to be educated. It's not the same.
Okay.
I'm really enjoying this podcast. This is really fun. I tell you, I just have the opportunity to educate is a wonderful thing. And I really appreciate you allowing me on your show.
I thank you very much for doing this today. This has been very beneficial for everyone. It has enlightened me. I learned about COVID-19, the IT term for 2020. I thank you so much for allowing us the time and to be a guest on the show, mystylelive.com. You know, anytime you want to come back and talk to us about any healthcare, anything, you know, that you can help educate us more, we would love it.
Sure, sure. That'd be great. I'd love to come back to your show and provide some knowledge and education and bring some more style points back to your show.
Okay, maybe we can get some luxury PPEs the next time.
That's right. That sounds good. Luxury PPE. Sounds like an opportunity for branding.
And thank you, Dr. Dennis, again for coming on to the show. We look forward to seeing you again.
You're welcome.
Peace. Y'all
have
out.
Okay, bye. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
After a relatively slow and scattered response to the global pandemic known as COVID-19, this has been one of the biggest disruptions in our daily lives, and many of us have known things to be normal are uncertain at this time. As the weeks have gone by, the months have passed, we still do not have answers.